yakking off.
What's up, Jack?
Not much. What's going on, my friend?
Oh, you know, same old, same old. Just recording another episode of Yakking Off with Jack and Tom.
Wait, what are we doing?
Oh, nothing. Never mind. I forgot.
Gosh, it's been so long. I don't know if I remember how to do this.
Nah, I don't remember how to do it either.
Okay, good. I'm not the only one, then.
Yeah, it's definitely been too long. There's been so many things to talk about. You know, sadly, I think we're going to start today's episode off with a little bit of news that actually just happened today. So this is going to be a very special Yakking Off and Jack and Tom. We should have probably redone the theme song. Coming in on this super happy theme song, and then all of a sudden we're going to go right into
it. Everybody loves our theme song.
A terrible, terrible tragedy. But I'm going to go ahead and let CNN break this to you. So in case you guys haven't heard, go ahead and pull that up right now. Check this out.
This is CNN breaking news.
The breaking news. Roger Ebert, according to the Chicago Sun-Times, has died. The legendary film critic, Roger Ebert, has died. That's what the Chicago Times newspaper is reporting today. Ebert, 70 years old.
Yeah, so sadly, Roger Ebert, after a long battle with cancer, longer than I even knew. I mean, I guess I've been out of the loop with Ebert and Roper. I mean, the guy's such an icon. He goes back so far with film reviews and everything. Really, I mean, pioneered the whole thing and made it what it is today. But I haven't really been paying attention at all. I didn't realize that he's been sick since 2006 with, the operations he had to have on his salivary glands and thyroid for cancer. I mean, the guy couldn't even talk for a while. It seems like he was actually in 2011 trying to get back into television, but I don't know what happened with that. I guess it was just a little bit too hard, too complicated. I mean, 70 years old. Yeah, I guess when your job is talking about movies, you never really want to stop doing it. But even at 70, it's tough. But yeah, I think he's earned his break now. So, as everyone else has said, he's joined Gene Siskel in heaven at the best movie theater in the world, hopefully.
Right. I can remember watching Siskel and Ebert at the movies when I was a kid. And it was a way for me to... It actually started me on being a film fan and everything. And, you know, from that young age, just seeing trailers, because you didn't have YouTube or anything like that, so this is one of the few shows where you could see extended trailers instead of just the TV spots, unless you went to the theater, and also clips and things like that, and to get these guys' honest opinion, because now with the internet, you know, with the rise of blogs and podcasting and message boards and everything else, any asshole with an opinion can tell you, yeah, I like that movie, or no, that movie wasn't worth your time, but these two guys actually had some knowledge as to what they were talking about instead of just watching something and saying, oh, that was terrible. They had the film experience and everything else. Interestingly enough, did you hear the story about how he was going to get back into TV?
No, I have no idea other than something I read in like an article online or something.
Right. He, when he had the cancer, I think they actually removed his jaw or pieces of it. So, obviously, like you said earlier, he couldn't talk. Well, this computer programmer decided, because Ebert spoke like Stephen Hawking. He typed into a keyboard, but instead of that very electronic, computerized voice like Stephen Hawking did, this programmer went through hours and hours and hours of video and tape and seminars and speaking engagements and everything that Ebert did, and program this program for him that when he typed into the computer, it would spit it back out in his own voice based off of what this guy pulled from all the tapes and everything. So that was pretty cool.
That's awesome. Isn't it amazing what we can do now? Technology.
Yeah.
I mean, even people that can't move and stuff, that can't type on a on an actual keyboard, you know, they can, the computers now can track their eye movement, so they can just look and basically move like almost like a mouse type icon with their eyes. I mean, it's just crazy what we can do now with technology, but that sounds like it would have been pretty cool and definitely an interesting way. I mean, it's a unique thing because I'm sure if you go through every single hour of recorded programming that Ebert ever did, you know, he probably said every word. Well, I mean, every word that he would be likely to say, I guess, on TV. But
I forgot the amount of time. It was hundreds, if not thousands, of hours of.
Oh, it's gotta be. I mean, because what was it like? The '70s, some point.
75 was the first time that those two gentlemen were on TV, on the television.
Yeah, because I was just looking some stuff up to get a little bit of background on him, and it looks like he started at the Chicago Sun-Times back in 1967.
Right.
So, I mean, this guy's been doing this forever. So he's definitely, I mean, who doesn't know Two Thumbs Up? You know, I mean, everybody does. And it's just kind of like what you said, which touches on another thing somebody else said on, I think, CNN, is he really, you know, their whole format paved the way for what we're doing now, which is basically just two assholes having an opinion about stuff. You know, and there's so many people out there who literally have no knowledge whatsoever. You know, like two guys I know named Jack and Tom. Well, I have a communications degree. That should count for something. I'm an effective communicator. So I'm an expert, but I'm not Roger Ebert. So thanks to him, we have this format and this ability to emulate him. And I think what we're going to do now for this episode of Yakking Off is we're going to do some movie reviews in his honor. I know Jack's been a busy boy seeing some movies. So I'm going to go ahead and let Jack give me his opinions on Oz the Great and Powerful and G.I. Joe Retaliation. Because believe it or not, I've been so busy I haven't seen either one yet. So give me the play-by-play, Jack. What's up?
All right. Let's start off with Oz the Great and Powerful because that one's been out for a little bit. And I think we also brought it up in a few of the podcasts, or at least one of them that I know of.
Yeah, plus we both love Disney so much. Woo. It's always fitting to talk about Disney.
So I didn't have really high expectations for Oz when I went to see it. Based on the trailers that I saw, I thought it looked a lot like Alice in Wonderland.
That's what everyone keeps trying to compare it to. Even like the release date and the budget. I mean, everything is like, oh, this is just like Alice in Wonderland. This, you know.
The good news is that it's not. Alice in Wonderland was miserable. I didn't like it. I'm a huge Johnny Depp fan. I was not excited about Alice in Wonderland at all. I'm a big Tim Burton fan as well, and it was just the wrong formula for those two. But everybody's seen that, so let's continue on with Oz. Oz is not Alice in Wonderland. I really, really enjoyed Oz, and like I said, I had low expectations going in.
Yeah.
A friend of mine actually wanted to go see it, and he's been bothering me to for about since it came out, and he's traveling now, so I finally gave in and said, okay, we can go see it before you take your trip to Malaysia, the other side of the world, and you come back and it's out of theaters. So James Franco plays Oz, the wizard from the original movie,
1939?
Yeah, something like that.
I just watched it on Easter.
Yeah. That used to be a thing. Now they show it all the time, but I remember at Easter it was on all the time, so when I was a kid.
Yeah, it holds up too.
Yeah, it really does. So anyway, James Franco plays Oz, the wizard from the original movie. It's all about how he gets to Oz, how he rises to become the wizard. There's a few familiar faces, as far as characters goes, the main one being the Wicked Witch. Won't give away any spoilers there if you haven't seen it, but it shows her transformation. It kind of explains why she was destroyed by water in the original film, which I thought was really cool. So watch out for that scene and see if you're as surprised as I was.
Well, I'm gonna just I'm gonna go ahead and say every app that we use to broadcast this thing has a 15-second skip ahead. So go ahead, I want you to spoil it because I want to know. Anybody that doesn't want it spoiled, hit the 15-second jump, and I'll count it off right now so that you don't get screwed up. So what's up with this witch? Why does she get killed by water?
Well, they don't really explain it.
Oh,
but
great.
Way
to set up a spoiler.
No,
she cries.
They don't really explain it. They try to. She cries. And when she cries, she's so enraged or hurt or whatever that the tears actually burn into her skin. So she's got this fucked up water allergy, apparently.
So she's allergic to water. That's not really a spoiler. We already knew she was allergic to water.
Right, but they didn't. There was never any explanation as to why. There was never any.
It doesn't sound like you just explained why.
Film, nothing. Whatever. You just fucking throw water on somebody and they die.
There is no explanation. I was expecting you to be like, oh well, you know, actually she came from the desert and was made of sand, like Sandman from Spider-Man.
No.
Did I hurt your feelings, Jack?
No, you're reading way
dick.
Too much into it. It's a kids' movie.
Is it? Was it appropriate for kids? Because that was the main reason I didn't get to see it. My girlfriend's daughter was scared. She said, oh, I don't know. I told her, I said, if you can watch Pirates of the Caribbean, then you can watch this movie. There's no way that it's going to be scarier than that.
I took Brittany and she didn't get freaked out by anything.
Yeah.
I will say that it was directed by Sam Raimi and there are a few Sam Raimi touches in it, which I didn't like because I feel like he keeps going back to the well too many times. There's one thing in being a director's trademark, and then there's another thing of, come on, man, come up with something new.
Yeah.
So the witches, especially the ugly ones, are, because there's more than one in the movie. There's actually four. So the uglier witches are actually very Deadite-ish in the way that they move and the way that they look and the way that they talk. And if you saw Drag Me to Hell, he used that same Deadite-style twitchy movement with the witch in that. So it's like, come on, man.
Yeah.
You gotta come up with a new monster. I know this has been working for you, but...
Right.
Your fans demand more.
Yeah, I think Tobey Maguire actually tried to emulate that in Spider-Man 3, too, with his
right.
dancing and acting.
Yeah. There were a few Raimi touches, the witch thing being the most obvious, but if you're a Raimi fan and you've seen other of his movies, you'll pick them out pretty quick.
Right.
So anyway, back to the plot line.
We got a traditional prequel going on here, right, basically? You said that this
What's
is
that?
It's a prequel, setting up
yes.
Oz and the whole
yes.
story of how he got there, and which we do know from the first movie that it was a hot air balloon, and
yep.
we also know that from the trailer. So Oz is a circus magician.
Oz is a carnival magician. Which
carnival
makes it even better.
Okay, gotcha. All right, so the guy ends up in Oz, crash lands, and what happens?
He meets the witch.
Who's the witch? Is that Mila Kunis?
Yes.
Yeah, she's
Mila
so hot.
Kunis is the witch and the Wicked Witch. She's the one that goes through the Hulk transformation about halfway through the movie to turn into the Wicked Witch.
Now that's a spoiler.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
There you go.
Post-mortem.
And she's the one who burns when she cries, too.
I did not know that.
So there's that.
I knew that there was a transformation because all the witches started off good. North, south, east, west, and then
yes,
they all...
Yes, the only one that stays good is Glenda, obviously.
Right. And she's from the north,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. Yeah, and then I think the one that Dorothy dropped the house on is the other evil Deadite-looking one.
Yeah, the Wicked Witch of the East.
Yes. Yeah, because she's the main baddie, and then she turns the Wicked Witch of the West from being the Good Witch of the West to the Wicked Witch of the West.
Interesting. And
there's that.
So there's a witch from the south too? She's the good witch?
There's four witches, but I don't remember much about the fourth, to be honest. They may have only mentioned her or showed her or talked about her, but...
That's weird. It's like they're almost leaving the fourth witch up, because she's not in the other movie at all.
No.
And it seems like nobody knows anything about her. I never saw Wicked, but I know the story of Wicked is supposed to be a take on that prequel-esque type of thing where it's, you know, the witches before the movie.
Right.
Is there...
This new movie just ignores Wicked altogether, so...
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought. I was going to ask you that, but...
Yeah.
That's what I figured. So what are the highlights of the movie? What's good? What's terrible?
The effects are really good. Some people have said that they're bad and that they're cheesy looking, but I actually thought that that added to it, because when you watch the old movie, you know, it's painted flats is all it is. It's what they had back then, and it's guys on strings and stuff. So they actually intentionally made the CG look flat and oversaturated with color, like it was painted and everything. So I actually enjoyed that aspect of it. So that was a highlight.
Sounds
good. The acting is all really good. James Franco can be a little bit cheesy at times, but overall, the acting was really good.
Yeah, again, that plays into the original too, I think, though, because the character, and there's already this character kind of set forward in the first movie.
Right.
So it sounds like they paid enough homage or however you say that, homage.
They did. There's a lot of things, and the third act really focuses on how Oz got to be who he is. And there's even an appearance by a major appearance by a very famous prop of Oz's in the original movie. And I'll leave it at that.
Yeah,
unless you want to skip ahead 15 seconds.
No, we can leave that one, because that one... I guess, did they get into the explanation in specific detail of why he had a bag full of heart clocks and diplomas and like stuff like that in his
balloon? It's all pretty much bullshit. It's all a sham. I mean,
yeah,
he gives out gifts at the end of this movie too, and it's all, you know, well, since I can't grant your wishes, I'm going to give you these instead, and it's all just, you know, carny nonsense, like
right.
little 5-cent trinkets that he probably had as from either traveling or being part of his show or whatever.
Yeah. So overall, you said effects you liked, acting was pretty good. Story. Good story, bad story?
Story was good. It's what you'd expect. They actually kept the same formula from the original movie. So all of the people that Oz interacts with in Kansas also show up when he gets to the Land of Oz, which was a nice touch. Like his assistant in the carnival that he treats like crap, not his female assistant, his male assistant, like his technician, for lack of a better term,
okay.
Shows up in Oz as a monkey in a bellhop's uniform. And he befriends him and he treats him like crap. But at the end, they find out that they're really friends as well.
Oh, well, that's a positive touch, I guess.
Yeah, so you got that going on. He meets Glenda in the first one. Or in Kansas, and her last name is Gale. Like, her Kansas counterpart is Gale. I forgot what her first name was, Wanda maybe, but I was trying to figure out, and I don't know the books, so if anybody knows the significance between Wanda Gale or whatever her name is and how she ties into Dorothy, I would love to know that, because they didn't really... I was thinking, oh, it's Aunt Em, but no, it wasn't. It was some other Gale.
Yeah, I know that the... When I was watching The Wizard of Oz, the original movie, on Easter, I went back and started looking at the origins of it, and I just kind of wanted to know a little bit more about the background of it, and found out that, you know, it was based on a book that was written turn of the century time, and because it was so popular, the guy actually wound up doing, like, a whole bunch of these things. Like, I don't even remember how many it was, but it was a lot, like 20 or 30 books or something like that. And I think most of it was actually all after, you know, I don't know if any of it was prequel-esque.
Yeah, I don't think there was an origin story. I know it was all after. And then he might have expanded on characters, because, like, I know there's a book called The Tin Man of Oz, or The Scarecrow, The Lion of Oz, or any of those things.
Right. Yeah, so they got into a little bit of the background, I guess, of each individual character. I mean, once you're trying to spin off and make a sequel of something, you really have to start narrow casting what you actually discuss, which is really when things start to get bad, if you ask me.
Right.
But it sounds like you enjoyed this movie overall.
Yeah, I really was surprised by it, especially since I had such low expectations. And that might be why I liked it so much, because I went in thinking it was going to be shit and was pleasantly surprised. So
that's good.
I recommend it. If you haven't seen it already, I would do it, because it's probably not going to be around much longer with Iron Man and Star Trek and all the other summer blockbusters.
Oh yeah, we're coming up
getting
on
ready to open.
We're coming up on the hot season. I can't wait for May. So I'm psyched.
Go see it if you don't have the time to go see it. Definitely check it out when it comes out on Blu-ray or Netflix on demand. However you do it, I do want to play a clip just to set up the acting a little bit, and also to set this up. You're gonna hear some familiar talk from the original movie about the witches and things. And the clip is also James Franco is the wizard, obviously, and Zach Braff, who plays the little monkey companion and also his technician from Kansas. And you can hear the acting and the banter that they have, and there's even a couple funny little jokes in here. So check it out.
I feel like Jay Leno set up a clip.
I wasn't even in the damn movie.
Thank you for sending it. All right, here we go.
You're really going to do this? How hard could it be to kill a wicked witch?
Hard. Really hard. It's very, very hard to kill a wicked witch. And what about that poor girl back there? I think she really liked you.
She'll get over me. They always do. She's a pretty young witch. There'll be plenty of wizards knocking at her door.
Oh, every lie you tell gets us one step closer to the Emerald City dungeon.
And don't think of them as lies. Think of them as stepping stones. The road to greatness.
Wait, I got it. We'll turn around and go back. You'll come clean. You apologize for lying about being the wizard and for lying to that poor girl, okay? You gotta really seem contrite. You gotta sell it. Maybe you can even cry. Can you cry? I could cut up an onion.
I'm not going back. We're gonna find this wicked witch, steal her wand, I'll get that big pile of gold, and you can have a nice pile of bananas, all right?
Bananas. Oh, I see. Because I'm a monkey, I must love bananas, right? That is a vicious stereotype.
You like bananas?
Of course I love bananas. I'm a monkey. Don't be ridiculous. I just don't like you saying
it. Yeah, it seems like it's going to be pretty good. Pretty cute.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, we already talked about that. I had a mental block for a second.
Okay. Yeah, like I said, we're both out of practice here. So this is definitely going a little bit slow.
Like we were ever in practice to begin with.
Hey, I'm a seasoned professional. I've had three offers from major networks.
Ooh. Are you the next host of not the Tonight Show, Late Night?
I'm taking over Carson Daly's show. Because Seth Meyers is going to get Jimmy Fallon's show. Jimmy Fallon is getting the Tonight Show. And Carson Daly is now hosting The Voice. And
is Seth Meyers really going to get Late Night? I didn't hear that.
Yeah, probably. And pretty much that's going to lock up what's his name? Executive producer of Saturday Night.
Lorne Michaels.
Yes, Lorne Michaels. His production company is now going to control essentially all of NBC Late Night Monday right. through Saturday. Because he's a producer on Jimmy Fallon. So if Jimmy Fallon moves and Seth Meyers steps in, I think that's pretty much a go. I liked it better when it was Howard Stern rumored to be the new host of The Tonight Show. That would have just been an awesome FU to Jay Leno, who sucks, by the way. But
he had a good joke the other night, but if you're on for 20-something years and you only have one good joke every once in a while that everybody talks about, you got problems.
Well, I mean,
like with Carson, you could talk about Carson bits for weeks or you were looking forward to things. With Jay Leno, it's just that very Vegas tip-your-waitresses type of comedy that is not good at all.
Yeah, it's a different world. I mean, Carson was the late night king, you know, like back in the 70s into the 80s, you know, it's such a different, it's not as drastic as it was in the 50s, say, with, what the hell is the guy's name before him?
Steve Allen?
No. I'm not thinking of The Tonight Show, I'm thinking of that other big famous Ed Sullivan? Ed Sullivan, yeah. So, I mean, like, back when there was only five channels to watch, obviously, you know, it was a huge, huge, huge deal, you know, and now there's a million channels to watch. So it's, right. You know, nobody is ever going to be as important or as iconic as, you know, any of the late night shows were before. But that being said, Jay Leno, I mean, first of all, it's a bunch of writers writing the jokes. So it's not even him per se. I mean, he gets the final approval of what he actually says and how he delivers it. But it's a bunch of people writing him jokes, but all this, I mean, Howard Stern points this out very validly, if you ask me, is that all the stuff that they've done that's been any good for the past, like, 10 or 15 years has come from Howard Stern. I mean, he went as far as to hire...
Yeah, it's all a ripoff.
He hired Stuttering John away. Jaywalking is the man on the street interviews that Howard used to do. I mean, just the ripoffs are super blatant. So, you know, that just annoys me. But, you know, we're not here to talk about Jay Leno and his stupid chin and voice. We're here to talk about movie reviews. So we got your feedback on Oz the Great and Powerful. I'm definitely going to check that out. I think I'm going to see it in the big screen before it goes away. There was another one that you had seen that sounds like it'd be another good one for the big screen, too. Especially, I think it was recorded in Dolby Atmos, which I still haven't seen a movie mixed in Dolby Atmos, which is just insane for some reason. But go ahead and tell us about G.I. Joe.
I didn't see this one in any special type of format. I saw it at the mall because I didn't feel like going down to Orlando. But the second movie I saw over the weekend is also the number one movie at the box office this week, and that's G.I. Joe Retaliation.
Is there anything else playing? Well, Spring Breakers is out. Speaking of James Franco.
Yeah.
How weird is that? Like, he goes from the Disney movie Oz to having threesome with Disney girls in Spring Breakers. Right. Playing a drug
deal.
Yeah,
how that movie Admissions with Tina Fey and what's his fuck?
Paul Rudd?
Yeah, that's how.
That looked so lame.
Yeah, there's really nothing.
Yeah, it's a weird
one. So anyway, G.I. Joe, if you saw the first G.I. Joe movie, just erase it from your mind, because they don't even care at this point. They did bring, what's his face, Channing Tatum back, or is it Tatum Channing, whatever his name is.
Channing Tatum.
Yeah, that guy.
What kind of name is Tatum Channing? Come on.
Who cares? What kind of name is Channing Tatum?
Well, that was my joke. I like Channing Tatum. Did you see...
Yeah,
he's
good. He was super good in 21 Jump Street.
Yeah, 21 Jump Street was great.
That impressed me. So they brought him back, but that's pretty much it. Oh, and Ray Park is back as Snake Eyes, but other than talking at Disney for Star Wars weekends, what's that guy doing this anymore?
Nothing.
So, no Jamie Foxx, obviously, no story tie-in to anything.
If you didn't see the first one, don't care. Because that's actually one of the reasons I didn't go and just hop in the theater the other day and see the second one, because I was like, there might be something I need to know from the first one. They sure as hell, I mean, it's called Retaliation. You'd figure they were retaliating to something that happened before.
They are retaliating to something, but it's something that happened in this movie. Not,
okay, so it's its own standalone movie.
Right. I'll just put it out there in that the movie was just okay. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. There's worse ways I could have killed an hour and a half. I mean, it's The Rock and Bruce Willis shooting at people, and what American male doesn't like that type of shit?
Sure.
And really, it's an hour and a half commercial for toys. I mean, it comes up, Hasbro's logo is right there before, like, I don't know who distributed it, but for argument's sake, let's say the Paramount logo. Hasbro comes up first. It says, you know, in association with Hasbro. So it's an hour and a half way to sell toys. One of the elements that I didn't like as an adult was something that I really liked as a child, and that was the ninja element. The Snake Eyes, Storm Shadow, Jinx ninja thing, ninja side story just bored me to death, and I didn't really care. But I remember as a kid, like, everybody wanted a Snake Eyes figure. Everybody wanted a Storm Shadow figure because he was white and Snake Eyes had the black outfit. And that's what kids like. So
why's it got to be racial? You know,
they're not making the movie for me. They're making it to sell toys.
Yeah. So G.I. Joe, not so hot.
G.I. Joe, I would say if you're a fan, rent it. If you like mindless, bloodless action movies, rent it.
Yeah,
I wouldn't recommend.
Good action, big budget, good action.
Yeah, the action was really good. There's a few sly one-liners in it. I actually have a clip for this one too, and I just wanted to play it to show you the type of humor that's in it. It's very in the now humor and very gung-ho G.I. Joe humor.
the block. As always, do you mind leading us in a few words, please, sir?
In the immortal words of Jay-Z. Whatever deity may guide my life, dear Lord, don't let me die tonight. But if I shall before I wake, I'd accept my fate. Hell yeah!
Hell yeah!
Hell yeah.
So there you go.
Okay.
It's The Rock praying to Jay-Z before the Joes go to battle.
I have to say, based on that clip, I have no interest in seeing this movie now. Holy crap, that's bad.
It's cheesy. I mean, like I said, it's not for us, though, is it? I mean, it's to sell toys. It's to market to the younger generation. I will tell you, as a fan of action movies, it is better than Expendables 2. And I loved Expendables 1.
It was all right.
If you like shoot 'em up type movies, it was better than Expendables 2, but that's not saying a whole hell of a lot.
See, my movie that I go to for action, where the entire time I'm like defending the movie because it's like, holy crap, I'm actually seeing this movie and liking it, was the first XXX with Vin Diesel.
Right.
I really enjoyed that as an action popcorn flick.
Yes.
Am I going to sit there and say that like Vin Diesel is the next, you know, Sean Penn as far as acting goes? No, but it was what it was. I mean, it was a good action movie, but I don't know. The G.I. Joe, you know, typically action movies like this are kind of geared toward, you know, PG-13 audience. You know, it's not like a kids movie, right?
No, I mean, the humor that's in it and the language that's in it, I mean, it may be PG-13, but they don't get away with their obligatory F-bomb. Hmm. They have it, but they cut it. It's like a mother foot. And then it goes on to another scene. Mm-hmm. So you get the implied that they said it. And there's, you know, there's the other language. And there's a really, really funny panty joke, which is in there. Mm. But, you know, that's another thing that boys are like, oh, panties. Ah! And they're all giggly about that. And then they go buy action figures. And Hasbro makes money. And it's the number one movie. And everybody's happy. It feeds the machine.
Yeah, I guess so.
Definitely worth a rental if you're an action fan, or if you're a G.I. Joe fan, or if you're just curious. If not, you can skip it and live the rest of your life happy.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess I'm going to. I mean, I really, really was going to go see this, and now I'm like, all right, whatever. I have just to jump in, 2 minutes tops on a movie review. I haven't seen anything new, but I did watch something the other night on a premium channel, Stars, maybe, I can't remember, but this movie, I'm not even going to bother with a trailer or anything like that, I was going to, but you know what, all right, this movie's called Rubber. You ever heard of it?
Negative.
Yeah, me neither, until I watched it, and the only reason I caught it like a halfway through, because I was like, what the fuck am I watching, like, what is this? All right, so this is a horror type of film. I guess they would classify it as horror. It seemed horror-ish to me. But it's about a tire that kills people by psychically linking into their brains and making their heads explode.
Hmm.
So most of the movie is just a tire rolling around. But, for some reason, there is an audience on a hill that keeps appearing wherever the tire is getting ready to, like, kill people, and they're watching as if they're, like, spectators. So...
It's a commentary on NASCAR.
Dude, this movie was ridiculous. And apparently it was in theaters on April 1st in 2011. So that's fitting. It's a fitting date. But
Is it Troma? Is it any like weird cult studio like that? Or
no, it was made by, let's see here if I can find that information. It was a foreign director. And it is classified as comedy horror. So they did realize that they were being funny in this thing. But there were actually some, like, known actors in this. Like, it wasn't completely, like, nobodies. I can't remember the guy. Like, I'm trying to recognize. Is it Steven Spinella? Does that name ring a bell to you?
No.
I don't know. All I can say is it's on iTunes. I don't think it's on. Something came up on Netflix for Rubber, but I don't think it is it. Let me just double check that. But like I said, it's on premium cable. If you can try, don't pay, don't try too hard. Yes, it is on Netflix. So if you have Netflix, just, I'm not saying to watch the whole thing. I'm just saying watch some of it. And maybe even like fast forward through. Because it is just, the whole time you're going to look at it and say, what the hell am I watching? And how, not to steal the, you know, How Did This Get Made title from Paul Scheer and those guys over at Earwolf that do that podcast, How Did This Get Made, that's awesome. But how the fuck did this movie get made? I mean, and it's actually kind of well done. Like, the effects and stuff, like the tire moving around by itself. Like, you know, it's not just like you can see a rope pulling a tire and it's like, oh.
Well, how hard is it to stand behind a tire and roll it into frame? Come on, Tom. You no. don't need fucking CG to do a tire moving.
Yeah, but this thing, it like, it stops and starts and turns and it acts like a person. Like, it interacts with things. Because it has to, like, learn its ability to blow heads up. So it starts with, like, small animals and works its way up. And then at one point...
This is awesome. When we're done recording, I'm going to look.
I can't remember what... Something happened to the tire to piss it off. And it wound up blowing up, like... I don't know, like a 10-mile... Like a 10-mile area of heads. Like, you just blew up all these people. And... At the end, they're trying to trick the thing, and I don't want to spoil the end, because let me tell you, watch the first 10 minutes, skip to the middle, and then skip to the last 10 minutes, if you really want to just get a you know, feel for what the hell's going on. But that's my, you know, in honor of Roger Ebert.
Roger would be proud.
I'm pulling that out there.
So that he didn't have to.
Yeah, it was like 3 in the morning at night, and there was nothing else on.
Wow.
So, I checked it out, but I think we
and
did...
on that note, you wanna
Yeah, I think we did a good, we did a good job eulogizing, Ebert and kind of, doing something in his honor. I think he'd be happy. So,
sure.
So, it, you know, definitely sad to see him go, and, I wish him all the best wherever he may be. But I think it's about that time again.
Yeah. Your feedback.
Well, as always, we love to hear from our fans. And there's a few easy ways to do that. First of all, you can email us. I have email address tom@yakinoff.com. Jack is, coincidentally, jack@yakinoff.com. We have the comments at yakinoff.com if you feel shy and don't want to pick a favorite between the two of us. And all of the Yakins are without a G. So it's just YACKINOFF. Yakinoff.com will redirect you now to our Facebook, which is facebook.com/YOWJT, YOWJT. We still haven't, as I promised, filled in any of our WordPress or anything like that. So it's still a priority. There's still a lot of things going on right now. It just so happens that it's a really busy time for both of us. So, you know, please bear with us, and we're going to work as hard as we can to bring you a quality product for a web presence. But any feedback, anything else that you have for that, those are the best places to reach us. And Jack, you have any other updates?
Yeah, talk to us on Twitter, @YakinOff.
Oh, yeah,
James Arnold Taylor does. Why don't you?
That's right. Yes. We don't have many Twitter followers, and we don't tweet often, but when we do, it is quality. And celebrities, all the celebrities out there pay attention. We're huge in the celebrity world.
Oh, yeah. So coming up in Yakinoff Network news, we are going to unveil our Star Wars podcast here very, very soon. I won't ruin the title because it's kind of clever. And we will also have our theme park edition coming up very, very soon with some exciting things happening this summer in the Orlando I guess Eastern Seaboard area. If you're interested in hearing us talk about that, you can catch that. And I think on our next episode of Yakin' Off, we will cover TV shows, Walking Dead series, season finale, that type of stuff, and all the stuff you love to hear from us. So come back and listen some more.
Yeah, who knows? We change 5 minutes before we record. We change our minds on what we're going to do. So it's the fun of live entertainment. But thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next time from Jack and Tom Studios, the Yakin' Off Studios, I should say. Adios.